And good morning, everybody. This is Brant Hart with another edition of the Legal Forum. We talk to lawyers every week at this time about different facets of the law. And today we have with us Kurt Zaroski. He's an honor graduate of Bentley College and Suffolk University School of Law. He's co-founder and co-owner of Tippins and Zaroski Law Firm, located in Charlotte, and with his business partner, Andre Tippins, Kirk has focused his law practice on personal injury, workers' compensation, and wrongful death claims. He's licensed to practice law in both North and South Carolina, and he's a member of the Mecklenburg County Bar, the North Carolina Bar Association, the South Carolina Bar Association, the Western District of the Federal Bar of North Carolina, the Federal District of South Carolina, and the American Association for Justice. So, Kirk, we're happy to have you with us this morning. And just for those of us who maybe don't know a whole lot about it, just what exactly are we talking about when we talk about workers' compensation?
Workers' compensation is generically, you could call it the area of the law where an injured worker gets hurt on the job, and it's the process by which they get compensated for their time out of work and their injuries.
Okay, and what benefits are workers entitled to get?
We always say there's a lot of letters or little acronyms in workers' compensation. There's something called temporary total disability, and that is simply, when you're out of work, the law says you get two-thirds of what you used to make for a week going back for a year. So, for example, if you were making $300 a week, if you're out on workers' compensation, you get $200 a week until you can either return back to work with the employer you're working for, or there's another system. If you're working part-time, they'd have to pay what's called temporary partial disability, or what's called TPD. So you'd work, say, 20 hours with your employer, and then workers' comp has to make up two-thirds of the difference. There's a lot of numbers and very, very, very formulaic nature to workers' comp. Another aspect of it is called permanent partial disability. So, for example, if someone breaks an arm or has a surgery, their treating doctor will kind of look at the guidelines put out by the North Carolina Industrial Commission, which is the state agency that regulates workers' compensation, and in South Carolina works somewhat the same way. And they'll look at the ratings, and they will give an impairment rating. And how it's determined what someone gets for a settlement in workers' comp for the disability rating is, we'll use that same 300-200 ratio. If they have a $200 what's called compensation rate, and I realize it sounds all very technical, and we go through it, it's a lot of letters, a lot of numbers. It's very formula-based. And, for example, the whole body is kind of portioned up into different values of weeks, under the North Carolina and South Carolina systems. So that person with the broken arm I was speaking about a few moments ago, if the doctor says they have a 10% rating, for example, the whole leg in North Carolina is 200 weeks, so 10% of 200 is 20, 20 times the 200, and that person will get compensated $4,000. The other aspect of workers' compensation is the employer has to direct and pay for all medical treatment. So the poor gentleman that falls off the scaffold 20 feet is rushed to the hospital either by ambulance or by helicopter if he's in a remote location. The employer or their workers' comp insurance company has to pay all their medical bills. A lot of folks will ask me, do I have to pay co-pays every time I see the doctor? You know, what's going to happen? I don't have health insurance. I can't afford this. You know, I'm out of work. These are people in just really, really horrible situations. But in that case, if the claim's accepted, the employer has to come in and take care of all their medical bills.
Okay, so what type of workers' compensation cases are there?
There's a few basic types, and we'll just kind of keep it to the very basic aspect of it. There's what's called an injury by accident. So that's a scenario where a person would slip, would trip, where their coworker would come along and say accidentally hit him with a forklift. It's kind of can be a very subtle difference. If you're doing your normal job duties, for example, if you're walking out to the trash bin with a whole garbage bag loaded with trash and you throw it into the garbage bin, if it's a circumstance where nothing unusual or different happened, you just throw it in a bin and your shoulder blows out, that's would be considered in your regular duties. It's not a workers' comp case. But if it's the proverbial banana peel, if it's the slip in some oil as you're doing it and your knee, you know, you slip and twist your knee, if you're throwing that into the trash bin and, you know, you step on a pencil that's next to the trash bin and you hurt your shoulder that way, that is. So it's kind of a very subtle distinction. And if we get to a little later, we'll kind of tell the difference on what's denied, what's accepted. Another claim is if you hurt your back and your neck, you simply lift anything up and you feel a pain in your back. It's called a specific traumatic incident in North Carolina. You lift it up and boom, you just know you did something to your back. You feel the pain. That's generally going to be something that's the insurance company is responsible for. And there's other things, for example, if you get scarred or burned on the job through oil, superheated steam, molten metal. I've had just a whole variety of things happen to folks in just all different manners, metal injuries, that type of situation. There's also the carpal tunnel things, which people generally know as they may hear repetitive motion or carpal tunnel syndrome. That's where you're doing the same thing again and again, time after time. Used to be in North and South Carolina, would have a lot of industry, would have a lot of the textile mills that we remember from way back when. And those mills, you'd have folks doing the same job again and again, repetitive hand motion again and again, and they would unfortunately develop the carpal tunnel syndrome, which is essentially the nerves are getting all pinched in your wrist, and literally your hands fall asleep at night, and they need surgery typically for that. Also, in those days, they had the trigger finger, the folks that would say spray paint all the time, say up in Catawba County or in the mountain area. A lot of furniture mills used to be up there as well. Those folks would have it. And of course, way back, going back a little more, you'd have, we've all heard of the asbestos type claims. Of course, most of those buildings have been either refurbed or done, but they still pop up from time to time as well. Those are, I think, the basic workers' compensation claims.
Okay. And the next question is, what should you do if you're injured on the job? This is something that I had an experience with. It's been maybe about 13, 14 years ago here. I was working downstairs at the time. My desk was at the basement, and I was coming from upstairs to downstairs, and we had some sales presentations up on the wall there, and there were plexiglass covers in front of them, and I stumbled on the stairwell and put a gash in my elbow and had to get stitches. Typically, what would somebody do if they had a situation like that, Kirk?
The most important thing you can do is immediately report it to your manager, supervisor. The best thing you can do is get a report done in writing, and then the key would be to get a copy of it. That's where the most problems come up with folks, and I'm going to kind of get to the reasons why that becomes an issue. Ask the company, in your case, of course, you cut yourself, so you need medical care immediately. So ask the company to send you to the doctor immediately. We've had cases where someone literally was out on a job site and had slipped in the rain and twisted their knee to the point where actually it turned out they had a torn ACL and MCL, where they literally couldn't walk, and their boss in that case wouldn't do anything, so they had to crawl to their work truck and drive themselves to the hospital. So you do get those circumstances. Calling ambulance is always an option, so it comes to the job site. I had a case years back that was a denied case. The company was telling this particular insurance adjuster, this never happened, he never did it, didn't happen here, I don't know what you're talking about. So I got the ambulance call report, because this poor gentleman had literally a fracture in his leg, so he couldn't walk. And the report said, found Mr. Smith in the pallet with a fractured leg. And I said to the adjuster, have you looked at the address on this ambulance report? And she said, no. And I said, well, that's your job site. I said, your people are lying to you. And she could not believe that the company would do such a thing. But unfortunately, companies do. Another classic example is you'll get somebody gets hurt on the job, say it's their back, or maybe something not like your situation, Brent, where you had to see a doctor since you were cut. You hurt your back, and sometimes you injure your back, you just don't know how bad it's going to be. Might be a circumstance where, boy, you feel it, and it might be the next day where the disc is really going to literally not have you get out of bed, or a circumstance like that. The classic example I get is the manager will tell the poor person that injured themselves, they'll say, oh, I got this. I'll take care of you. I don't want to file on workers' compensation. Tell you what, go to the hospital right now, but tell them it happened at home. And of course, you can see where this is going. They'll go to the hospital. They'll tell the doctor, yeah, I hurt myself at the house. I fell down the steps or was picking up my kid or something like that. And then lo and behold, they'll get it to the insurance company. The insurance company gets the records. It says, I hurt myself at home, and the case is denied. And sometimes managers know that at companies, and they kind of know what they're doing since they're trying to save money. And sometimes, unfortunately, I've seen where managers, their bonuses and kind of their structure is kind of based on how many people get hurt on the job under them. So they're going to kind of basically deny the claim just kind of for their own interest. But it's unfortunate. But that's why immediately an accident report, immediate notice in writing, tell as many people as you can to basically let everyone know you've been hurt on the job.
Okay, and again, maybe another question that goes along with this, Kirk. You mentioned, of course, if the accident happens on the premises, what about the situation where people, excuse me, where people have to clock in and clock out? If they're not on the clock, but they're still on the premises when that happens, what normally happens in this case?
There are some subtleties to the law with that, but generally the rule is if you're in what's called the furtherance of your employee's duties, if it's a circumstance where you're still doing something of benefit to your employer, for example, it might be the classic situation where you're on your way to the job site, but you took your private vehicle, you went to the employer's lot, you picked up your employer truck, that's his truck, and you're traveling on the way to the job site. And perhaps maybe you're picking up some materials on the way, or you're picking up some coworkers, or doing some other duties for your employer. So the kind of the general rule is if it's something that's going to help out the employer, and there's all sort of exceptions. Of course, if you're in sales, you may not have certain hours. A lot of folks, maybe their salary, so they don't have set hours where there's a clock. And there are those exceptions. It's got to be something, again, for example, if you're a salesperson on the job, and of course it's reasonable to go get a meal at night, you know, because you're, again, doing your employer's job, but maybe it's not so in your employer's interest if just conveniently your friend works in that same town where you are and you're going to go out to the bar and have a few beers and then something happens. So it's kind of, there's a lot of rules within the rules, but the general thing is if it's something that's helping out your employer, furthering what's going on with your employer and then the job task you're assigned to do, it's going to be something they're going to find compensable.
Okay, and I think we've pretty much already answered this next question, but again, the question is, how soon should I let my employer know that I've been hurt on the job?
Again, the rule to me is always immediately. It can't be fast enough. North Carolina, you got 30 days technically, and South Carolina, it's 90 days to report, but the kind of the follow-up on that is, unless it's kind of what's excusable and basically your employer, their insurance company, is not prejudiced by, you know, you waiting. A lot of people don't know anything about workers' compensation. They have no idea. There's a lot of misinformation they may get either accidentally or on purpose from their employer. In that circumstance, you know, they may just be on their own. They're calling their supervisor every single day. What do I do about my arm or my back or what's going on? I need to see a doctor. And sometimes the supervisor legitimately doesn't know. Sometimes they do, and they're just giving them a hard time about it for various reasons. So there's a lot of times that they may not do it immediately, or their manager we get just refuses to fill out an accident report. So I've had folks, you know, do letters and get them notarized and send them along, or send them certified mail to their employer the next day. Hey, I got hurt on the job. Here's how it happened. Here's what I was working with. Here's the facts. I tried to tell John Smith, my manager. He won't do anything about it. And then there's a record of it. So that kind of thing is as quick as can be.
And I'm sure it always helps to have witnesses. In my situation, I had several witnesses. In fact, one of my coworkers did at least help bandage my elbow so that I could make the trip to the ER and get stitched up. So I know that it always helps to have impartial witnesses when things like this happen.
Oh, absolutely. And I found, you know, folks will usually do the right thing with it. And I say usually. There are, unfortunately, circumstances where someone feels a lot of pressure to get involved in someone else's case. But in general, I think people are good and gonna do the right thing and say, hey, yeah, he got hurt. I saw it. There was a case years ago. It was actually at what's called a hearing, which is basically a workers' compensation trial. And the last witness for the employer, once his boss and everybody had left the room, was gone, just finally turned and looked at the judge and said, it happened. It just happened. I couldn't live with myself if I didn't say it didn't happen. So people will do the right thing, and witnesses are very important. You know, I think a lot of people, again, are going to do the right thing.
Okay. Can the employer send me for a drug test?
Absolutely, and they typically... sometimes in circumstance that might be to the detriment of the person that's hurt, they'll send for a drug test immediately. It's one of the basis is for denying the claim if someone's under the influence of alcohol. You know, tests, for example, for marijuana, there's no level of intoxication in a marijuana test. It, you know, doesn't, in terms of your bloodstream. So we all know, you know, you can have alcohol and we can kind of get what's impaired and what's not. But they will do that all the time just to see if they can deny it.
Okay. Can an employer send a nurse with me to the doctor's appointment?
They typically do. There's a couple different ways that's done. One is with someone, it's just the nurse is what's called telephonic, in which case this person will actually be helpful in terms of setting up the doctor's appointments for the injured worker, kind of like a liaison between the doctor and the employer. There's a lot of them are, again, do the right thing. There are those, of course, that try to get a lot of information and be the employee's friend. And that's kind of a good caution point when you're injured on the job. Just kind of keep everything close and just discuss things with your lawyer. Don't be so liberal kind of with what's going on. You know, they are looking for reasons. Insurance companies are businesses. They make their money by the difference between what they pay out in claims and what they take in premium. So if they can deny something, you know, they're in the business necessarily of doing that. The nurse is one part of that. And again, the majority of them do a great job in helping out the injured worker. You do have a right in North Carolina to a private exam. So they can come to the doctor's appointment with you. Just let them sit outside in the waiting room so the doctor can talk to you one-on-one and kind of get the information from you. And you can ask the questions of the doctor. And then the nurse typically will go in and clarify mainly things like work status or try to get a future history prognosis. And they do have to provide anything, a report basically, to the insurance company and to your attorney. Another reason it's good to have an attorney is just so the attorney's getting, and the rehab nurse, they know the attorney's getting a copy of everything they're doing, kind of keeps them on their toes. But again, the majority of them do their jobs.
Do the employers or insurance companies typically hire private investigators to look into such cases?
They certainly can. It's a circumstance where the bigger the case goes and the higher it goes, you'll definitely see it doing it. For example, if you have someone that's claiming they can't work and there's a whole set of doctor's restrictions out there, they almost always will send out an investigator to see just what Mr. Smith is doing. Is he out there throwing around the concrete blocks in his yard? Is he doing things that are inconsistent with what the doctor says he's doing? And if they find that, and again, the vast, vast majority of people, no one wants to be on workers' comp, getting 2/3 of your check, having your life just waiting for an insurance company check. So the vast majority of folks aren't doing anything they shouldn't be doing. But if they are, the insurance company will definitely do that. You know, of course, the con side of that, I've had cases where they swore they had my guy doing something, in fact, going to work, working a big construction job, and turns out the videotape was of my client's twin brother. So, you know, you do get some funny stuff that goes along with that. You get some creative editing. But again, the vast majority of people hurt on the job are just trying to get back to work and support their families.
Okay, here's something that maybe a lot of people would wonder about. If I am injured, should I be concerned about what I do on social media?
Absolutely. it is something that I think in today's society, we're just not necessarily so conscious of. It's so common to, well, I'll just post this on Facebook or comment that on whatever other social media accounts I have. All of that is very, very easy to get. And, you know, you could be joking or make a funny comment. You know, for example, if you used to be a big weightlifter and you had a back injury and, you know what, you can't do a thing, but, you know, you want to go see your friends at the gym. You'll walk, go down to me. So you're just innocently walking on the treadmill, which your doctor can do. But then you go home and post a selfie of yourself next to your friend on the weight bench being goofy with the 300 or 400 pounds on the bench press. Or maybe you're just lying on the bench being funny and talking about, and I had a guy talk about how swole he was at the gym. And yeah, it was right off his Facebook page. And I, you know, I got it shortly there later. And of course I had already had the conversation with him. I said, you're being watched. Here's your circumstance. Don't do anything silly. And he was a young guy and, you know, it was what it was. And we had to kind of work around that circumstance. But, you know, I always tell people, shut down the social media. Don't, you know, post things like, I'm going to a mediation tomorrow, time to get paid. You know, even if you're trying to be funny about it or be goofy with your friends, that's not something that's going to work out for you.
Right. So here's another question, Kirk, about employer relationships here. What if my employer denies my case?
You have a right in both North and South Carolina. There are no judges in workers' compensation cases. They're hearing officers or commissioners or deputy commissioners. Basically, you have a right to have your case heard. And then the commissioner is the kind of the judge, jury, and sometimes the executioner. And you have that right. And that's if that's a circumstance that happens where your case is denied, you absolutely have to have an attorney going in there. You don't want to go in there alone.
Okay. Why are cases commonly denied?
There's what I call the statutory reasons, which is what the law would say. And then I'll get to the other reasons, we'll call them the practical or real life reasons cases are denied. Statutory reasons, you're going to have lack of notice where the employer says, we had no idea Mr. Smith was hurt. We didn't know a thing. Sometimes that's true. Sometimes they just say that. We talked about intoxication if someone's hurt and they're drunk. There's what's called horseplay, which is exactly what it sounds like. You know, Bob and Jim think it's a great idea to drag lift their forklifts and see whose is faster. You know, usually, unfortunately, it's the guy that's doing his job that gets hurt in that circumstance, not the two guys on the forklift. They'll say it's not an injury by accident, which we talked about, that, like, you know, Bob was coming down the steps, his knee just went out. He wasn't doing anything. It just, you know, he didn't slip or trip or fall. They'll deny for pre-existing conditions, even though they shouldn't. They'll say you were doing a job that wasn't in the course of your employment. And then, you know, outside the statute of limitations, North Carolina, you have 2 years to get your claim filed. Same with South Carolina. So if it were to happen today, you'd have 2 years from today to file it. Otherwise, it's going to be a circumstance where they're going to deny your claim. The actual or the real life examples, and I touched a little bit upon it. Sometimes managers or supervisors will really actively not do anything, and there'll be poor documentation or that accident report you filled out and gave to them and didn't get a copy of finds its way to the trash can or finds its way to the shredder. There are those companies I've seen where it's almost the unofficial business policy to deny a claim. I do recall there's something called discovery where I basically file questions and ask them to provide information about my person's claim, and I always ask for the personnel file. Well, in that packet was a fax from the main office, which I think was in Texas somewhere, to the home office here in North Carolina, and literally written on it by the manager was, back claims cost us money. We must deny all back claims. Needless to say, that case settled pretty quickly. Because of their behavior, but you see that. You'll see sometimes a politics example where they just don't like the guy that gets hurt, and they're just going to do everything to give the guy a hard time. It does happen that way, unfortunately, or some people are taking what the law is and maybe just interpreting it a little bit, so it's not anything that's necessarily obviously wrong, but something that they should probably accept and take care of the person, and they just don't. I always think of it this way. For every person that their case gets denied, there's probably 10 that don't or more. And, you know, it's again, companies are in business to make a profit. And, you know, that's sometimes companies view those cases as a way to kind of keep their profits up.
Okay, well, we got like about 2.5 minutes or so left in this segment. Okay. And one other question I guess we ought to ask before we finish this subject and move on to something else. How are cases generally settled?
They're generally settled a couple different ways. In both North and South Carolina, you have the option, if your case is accepted or you go forward in the commissions of North or South Carolina, say it's compensable, generally you can keep it open. In South Carolina, it's for a year. In North Carolina, it's 2 years from the last date you saw a doctor or got some compensation. For that rating example I was talking about earlier, you can settle on your ratings and it stays open. A lot of folks don't want to deal with workers' comp anymore. They are done. In that case, they want to close it out full and final, waive the rights to future medical care, and just be done with everything related to the insurance company and their company and just kind of move on with their lives.